raising black children in the United States can be really scary. And as a black mother, I realized I was parenting from fear. And I wanted to make a commitment to parent for liberation. You are listening to Parenting for Liberation podcast. And I am your host, Trina Green Brown. Each month, I'm joined by other black parents and we discuss our own journeys to push past our fears so that we can raise our beautiful black children to be whole, free, and liberated. Wake up, everybody,
no more sleeping. Hey, y'all, this is Trina. Thank you for tuning in to Parenting for Liberation's podcast. Today, we will be exploring black education and how black educators are so important to black young people. In the wise words of Malcolm X, and I'm currently wearing a Malcolm X t-shirt right now as I speak, the quote that was on my college graduation for the Black Student Union at UCLA was this one by Malcolm X. Education is the passport to the future, for the future belongs to those who prepare for it today. And we know that education has always been a struggle and a fight and something that our ancestors have fought for us to have the ability to read, for us to be able to go to schools and have not separate but equal education, but have the best education. And so we're actually recording live today from a university in Southern California that I actually teach at. We're at Cal State Fullerton. And I'm here to talk with some incredible folks who do work in support of Parenting for Liberation and youth here in Compton, California. I am here with Fenella, Marina, Paradise, and myself, and we're going to have a conversation. These lovely ladies have been supporting the youth here in Los Angeles through a program that we have implemented called SAFE, or SAFE stands for Strong African American Families. And so I'm excited to have y'all here today. Everybody say hey.
Hey.
Listen, y'all, it's my first time having a whole group in the studio. So nice. So before we begin, I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves, you know, your identity as a parent, and how you came to learn about Parenting for Liberation. So we'll start with you, Fenella.
Hello, I'm Fenella Williams. I am a parent and a grandparent, a proud grandparent of six black, strong young men. I came to Parenting Liberation about, I don't know how many years ago, but my first contact with Parenting Liberation was at a Mother's Day event. Still have my plants, Trina, and they are thriving.
Oh, shout out to Miss Barbara and Me in the Dirt, who did our plant medicine workshop for our, was that our 2022 Black Mama Magic event? And it's coming up soon, so look into it.
All right,
Marina.
Hey, y'all. I'm Marina. I'm currently working with Parenting for Liberation as the education coordinator for the SAFE program. However, I started with Parenting for Liberation also with the Black Mama Magic program or an event, and I've been loving every bit of this journey. So I am a mother of four, and I am just ecstatic about providing more resources for our black families.
And last but not least, Paradise.
Hello, everyone. My name is Paradise. I'm the oldest sibling, and I have two younger siblings, so I help out as much as I can with them. And I first heard about Parenting for Liberation, I would say the first one was, I think, the 2019 Kwanzaa Day event on Crenshaw, but Trina's also my mentor.
Yes. Paradise is like a caregiver for sure. Paradise got to pick up kids from school and everything. So I think I love about Parenting for Liberation is that we look at parenting in the expansive way that we know in our communities that it takes a village to raise a child. And so Paradise, you are also a caregiver along with this crew. And these are the incredible folks, in addition to Erica, who's not here with us today. But Erica's also one of our facilitators of the Strong African American Families program. So let's actually get into that program. So in 2023, Parenting for Liberation won a very competitive grant in California called Elevate Youth, which goal is to support in like decreasing youth access to drugs and things of that nature. It's supposed to be like a preventative diversion program. And when we applied, there was this curriculum that we really wanted to test out. It was called Strong African American Families. It was listed as an option. And we were in this phase of like parenting for liberation started when my kid was like 4 or something. And as he's getting older, I've been thinking about like what is the content and the curriculum that we can offer as an organization for folks who are raising teenagers or tweens, because liberated younger kids is different than these liberated teenagers. And I was like, we need help. And so there was this program that I learned about called Strong African American Families, and it's more inclusive. And also with the grant funding, we were able to bring on Marina as our education coordinator. And she's been phenomenal since she started. And she's been holding down the Strong African American Families program, which we call SAFE. So, Marina, can you tell us a little bit about the program? Like, what does it entail? Because it's a little, it's a complex program, but it's great, though.
It is. So, initially, the program started as just a research at the University of Georgia through their center of research for families. So, their goal was to figure out a way to decrease this high intake of Black youth engaging in risky behaviors and also alcoholism. So in creating this curriculum for the youth, they also decided, well, we need to do something different, and they incorporated like parents being involved in the program as well. So the parent along with the youth are having these really deep discussions on, you know, sexual conduct. They're having discussions on racial disparities. They're having discussions on what it is to be Black and proud. And in those discussions, they are building a deeper relationship with each other. And we are facilitating that as a guide and as also mentors. And now we're expanding our way into where we are a new village in our community. Also, from the research, it shows that by implementing this program, there is now a positive generational impact, whereas the youth that originally started with this program, now they're having these new ways of having discussion and living their lives for their children. And so it's amazing that we're able to empower our community in that way.
Yes, thank you for sharing about the program. I really love the program has like these three different components, right? Like the young people have their session with younger facilitators, and then we have the adults, parents, caregivers have a session simultaneously. Like, we're all in the same, we keep calling it a house. I'm like, the parents are in a living room, the youth are in another room, but it's literally our office. So but it's a house, you know, we a family. And they're, you know, they're having their separate sessions, and then we come together at the end and do this family session, which is just really beautiful to see it happening real time. Because you're talking to young people about, like, you know, how do you talk to your parents about these issues? And then you come into the room and, like, okay, now it's time to talk to your parents about those issues. And we've been talking to your parents about it. So it's actually a really, it's really, like, beautiful the way it's layered and it's intentional. And so, you know, it requires, like, to do this program requires like 4 facilitators at once. And, you know, we got a small but mighty team. We small, but we mighty. But it's not a lot of us that are on the staff of Parenting for Liberation. So we really rely on our community. We rely on folks who are connected to our programming, folks who come to our events. Like, we really do believe it takes a village. And so we've been able to bring in other folks like Fenella and Erica and other folks who were trained on the curriculum. So I want to invite you, Fenella, to like share what made you sign up for this program to say like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to do this program to support other Black families in our community.
Well, I am a retired Children Protective Service social worker. And I have actually facilitated parenting classes, but none like this. Because it integrates the youth with their parents. The parenting classes that I facilitated were parents only. And so when you have I can see you have the youth, you have the parents, and then you have the families to come together, how it's so beneficial for the youth and the parents, and they get to practice for an hour what they're going to be dealing with in their lives forever. So it's beneficial, and that's why I wanted to be a part of this.
Yeah. And Fenella works a lot with our parents and caregivers and thinking about how, as Marina said, like, we're trying to break generational curses or, like, shift the ways that generationally people are being in relationship to their children, right? So these teenagers who are in this program will eventually become adults and may become parents, and then they can actually choose to start foundationally how they want to be in relationship with their children, which is different than maybe what they were raised under. And so I know you as a grandma or a grandma, thinking about that generation, right? Like, you are supporting the next generation of parents as our young elder, our yelder, as we call them, who's coming back and supporting, you know, parents who are trying to figure it out now as you're raising, like, helping to raise your grandkids. So just really thinking about both generations and then thinking about Paradise, who, I forgot what gen you are. Are you a millennial?
Gen Z.
Okay. Gen Z is in our space supporting with the young people. And so, Paradise, I want you to share a little bit about, like, what about the SAFE program felt important to you, and why do you want to become involved in this, and why, how do you feel it's impacting families or mm-hmm. even the youth specifically, because you're in the youth space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was excited to get trained on this curriculum because I think it talks a lot on what is happening in our communities, whether we talk about it or we don't talk about it. So it was really nice to kind of have space to kind of have conversations around communication skills, how we can, like, have passive or aggressive communication skills, and, like, how we can, like, just be ourselves and, like, make sure we're, like, respecting other people, being firm, and, like, how important that is to have as a youth and, like, navigating life and, like, teachers and, like, siblings. So it was really nice to, like, have, like, homework, and, like, students were like, oh, you know, I'll de-escalate a conversation with my sibling. So it was really, really nice. I think also thinking about ways peer pressure happens, like, mainly in middle school and high school, and how students are navigating that, or, like, what's been changing since I was in middle school. So it was really nice to, like, see how we can have these conversations and, like, build up our youth to kind of mitigate the harm that's, like, happening in our community. So it was really nice. I think it impacted me just kind of, like, seeing different ways I can be a support system for youth, and, like, thinking about, you know, tips that they can do to, like, support themselves and advocate for themselves. And I think also having the parents kind of learn similar curriculum where they can together be on the same page and be like, okay, maybe you do have something you want to tell me, or maybe you do have something you want to share, and kind of the parents, like, okay, let me be open to that, or let me, like, start planning these conversations. I think, like, some parents, when we're getting ready to talk about sex and risky behavior and, like, how we can protect ourselves, so it was really nice to, like, see, like, oh, my parents already talked to me about this conversation. I was like, okay, what did you learn? And so it was, like, kind of opening it up, like, other youth were like, okay, I feel comfortable, like, sharing my experience, like, what I'm learning in school and how that's making them feel. So it was really nice to kind of just, like, really connect with the youth and talk about how they're doing. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing some of the things that you're hearing the young people are, you know, are wrestling with, because we know, like, you know, I don't even know. I'm think I'm a millennial. You a Z. Z? X? I don't know the letters. But what I know is that their experience is different. Even coming after a pandemic, right? Like, their high school and middle school is just different. Technology is different. All the things, it's just different. And so we know that even in every time our world and society evolves, that no matter what, too often Black children, Black youth experience the worst elements of the change and evolves, right? Whether it be more access to something that we don't have the similar access. And so data shows that in 2019, Black families, you know, had, like, some of the highest rates of poverty at 18% compared to white families at 7%. We learned that Black families are more food insecure, right? At a rate, like, 5-1 against their white counterparts. And Black family home ownership is lower. You know, we just know the statistics. We know the data, right? Which is why we do these programs, because we know that we need to support and provide the resources. And so just wanting to open it up to any of you to share, you know, like, what are some of the common problems? Like, Paradise was naming some of the things that students might experience in schools, but what are some of the common problems that you all are witnessing, especially you two, you know, as parents, And how does this program and the curriculum or what we're doing, how are we seeing that it's having an impact for folks to overcome some of those? I'm not saying it's like the miracle thing that's going to solve all of our problems, obviously. But like how are we trying to get at them through the program and through the curriculum?
I think that just looking at historically the way that Black families are, we're always operating out of place of fear because of the racial disparities that we have, because of the discrimination that we have. And so we often stop our children in their growth process because we're fearing, you know, putting them out there in the world. And so this program opens up our parents to being, like they say, askable parents as part of the curriculum, where our kiddos can come to us and say, hey, you know, I'm dealing with this. Whereas before, like growing up, it was just like, nope, we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to keep it moving. And that's just how we've been living, like just chuck it under the rug and like just keep going and never dealing with our problems. And so this program stops us and it like shows us, like especially parents, like full in the videos, like how we react. And it gives us a moment to step back and say, okay, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way to discuss that problem with my child, or, you know, just discussing it in general. And then allowing our youth to see us be vulnerable and say like, hey, you know, I didn't do all those things correctly, but I love you. And so the program offers the opportunity for our parents to say, hey, I love you. These are your strengths. I'm going to empower you. I'm going to make sure that you get to the goals that you want to get to. And then it's reciprocated by the youth by saying, Mom and Dad, I see you. I know what you're trying to do for me. And I love you as well. And we can do this together as a unit.
Yeah, I think the curriculum does make us go like, oh, but the videos. So the parent curriculum has like all these videos which show like three different reactions, like the chill, like lenient parent, the permissive parent, the very authoritarian, like strict, I'm gonna yell at you parent, and then the one who's like more, what is it, authoritative, or the parent who I would say is practicing like more liberated parenting, like trying to be open, which doesn't mean that they're perfect. Like they still be like, I'm so sorry the way that happened, yo. But the videos definitely be making it. I've been in the parent spaces where the videos, they be like, ooh, that's me. Okay, yeah. I think that. And sometimes they like, yeah, that's what the parent should have done. Right. So, exactly. Yeah, it's really good to actually have examples and models, because mm-hmm. sometimes it's like we all want to do parenting different. Like, I don't want to yell. I don't want to hit. I don't want to do these things, but I actually don't know examples of something else. And so mm-hmm. the videos actually demonstrate, you know, just like in day-to-day time, like here, real world examples, your kid didn't come home from school after school because they didn't text you because they said their phone died, you know, whatever the things, and you were worried sick, as Black parents are worried sick when our kids aren't responsive and we don't know where they are. And I don't want to act like the fear that we experience is not valid, right? Like, just the other day, like, I'm just reflecting on and want to say his name, Ryan Gaynor, who was murdered by the San Bernardino Police Department. Because his family, he was having an outburst. He's on the spectrum, and they called for help, right? And he's not here anymore. And so our fear is legitimate. I don't want Black parents to make, I don't want people to think like I'm saying like we're stuck in our old ways and we're scared. Like, we have legitimate fears, but we have to figure out ways to not limit our children because of our fear. We can't be too hypervigilant where we limit their ability to be free and to like grow and to, you know, like we can't limit them and put them in a box. We need to actually be doing the work to hold these systems accountable, to change the society. Instead of changing our kids, we need to change society. So I do want to acknowledge him because he's been on my spirit. I want to say his name, and I want to think about what are the ways that we can continue to support families who have young people who are being impacted in these ways. And not to say that this program will solve that problem, but a part of the program is that the young people can then become active in their community and their environment, right? Like active thinking about the issues that are impacting our families. And there is some like leadership development components, like trying to get the young people a job, but also helping them to identify like systems change strategies. Like, how do we build our power as a collective? So, you know, there's more to come on that. We can talk about that at the end, but I did want to say that, and I was not on the plan, but
it was needed.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll open it up to anybody else if they want to share anything.
Well, coming from a Child Protective Service perspective, I Black parents tend to have a firm parenting style. And like Rena was saying, it's basically out of fear. We've had to keep our children safe, put that fear in them. So, but the safe teaches us a different way of parenting. Not a different, so much a different way, but a way where it's softer for our children. Our children are exposed to a lot. They're exposed to everybody's style of parenting, and they pick it up. Whereas with my generation, I am, what am I? I'm the, what do you call it?
Baby boomer.
Baby boomer. Oh, yeah, I'm a boomer. I'm a boomer. And, you know, I did what my parents told me to do. I did what the neighborhood said to do. And with these children, these days, they're exposed to much more information. And so they know other people's parenting style. And they prefer some of it, or they come with some of it. And, you know, we sometimes, I have been guilty of telling my grandchildren, you're not white. Mm. You can't do this. Mm. And that's, that's not always correct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That there's a time and place for it. So safe for me, I appreciate the SAFE program. And they respect our parenting style. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we parents learn a different way of doing it.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because it's true. Like, we, like, you know, I thought you was going to say, I'm not so-and-so's mama. That's what I used to hear. Like, well, Johnny's mom lets him do this. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I ain't Johnny's mom. Okay? You know? But there are ways that I feel like, especially, you know, we're here at Cal State Fullerton. We're in Orange County, California, where the percentage of Black people is like 2% of the population. And so if my kid goes to a school out here, right, he's seeing that other kids have access to things, or can make a mistake and it's okay, right? And too often Black children have had to be adultified, where they don't get to make mistakes. They don't get to just be kids who like, oh, I did this prank at school and it wasn't a big deal. I got in trouble. But like, no, our kids will get arrested. We know that there's school push out. We know that there's school to prison pipeline. And again, I'm like, yes, we know that these things exist. And instead of trying to make our kids to conform, right, one of the things in the youth curriculum is they could either be a mouse, a monster, or they can be me. And that's just looking at how can we be, like, do we want our kids to be passive and just, like, you know, go with the flow and follow the rules and keep their head down, which then, you know, limits their ability to, like, actually speak up and stand up for themselves and say, actually, this is not okay and this is not fair. Or do we want them to be the more aggressive monster? So I think it is important for us to be having these conversations. And one thing I appreciate about the SAFE curriculum is that it always, what does the parent curriculum always say? Like, your family is unique and individual, and mm-hmm. we're not telling you how to parent. Yeah. These are just tools to add. You know your family,
you know,
best.
Your family, exactly. Best.
And right. So that's my belief. Everybody knows their family best. Anything you want to add, Dice?
I lost the train of thought, but I did want to say, I think it, like, kind of adding on to that point of just, like, the openness of the curriculum and kind of the take what you need, but also seeing the conversations. I think we, like, end up making, like, family agreements, so, like, seeing how we can be our family in the space, but also be in community with other people and, like, see how we can respect each other and see how we can, like, take care of each other. So I think that's, like, something that I was, like, learning or just, like, kind of understanding. So, yeah, I think that's really nice, too.
Yeah. That's true, because I think the other beautiful thing about being, like, being a parent in the space with your children there, with other people and their children there, is like you learn by watching other people with their kids. Like, you know, everyone's doing the same activity and, like, you know, your kids responded to the question. And so, you know, the parents are not only learning from the curriculum, they're learning from each other. And this is why it's important to parent in a community in a village, because, you know, in your house, it's one way. But then you see all these other parents doing different things. You're like, oh, I like the way she did that with her daughter. I might have to try that with my kid, you know? So it also is not just the curriculum, it's the community.
Can I just also say, yeah, like, it just brought to surface that saying that a lot of us have is, like,
what goes on in our house stays in our house. And so it, like, pushes us away from being vulnerable and asking for help, or just seeing, like, there's other ways to do things. And so, you know, building that community within the SAFE program, the parents are able to see, like, oh, she shared that so openly, and, like, I'm going to share that, my experience, too. And then even with the youth, they were like, oh, the other person shared something, so let me share something. And so, like, being in that space of sharing, it just makes us connect even more to see, like, yes, we are different, yes, but we do have a lot of commonalities, and, like, together we're better. So.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I started out with the CPS perspective, and what a lot of our children are in the custody of the state, because not because of a really abuse, but it's because of the parenting style. And so what SAFE does is it allows the children and the parents to come together and get an understanding of each other. And because sometimes schools are reporting, doctors are reporting, and they're taking our parenting style as abuse, and when it's not necessarily abuse.
Right.
So this kind of smooths that out a little bit, you know,
yeah,
for families.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know how I feel about CPS, Vanilla. You know how our organization feels about CPS, because we know that, you know, Black children are removed at higher rates. And
much higher.
As you said, it's not about abuse. It's often about, they quote unquote call it neglect.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, like, only like 10% is abuse, and like the other 90% is quote unquote neglect.
Neglect,
right?
Yes.
And so they're policing Black people and Black families for the things that I named earlier: poverty. Neglect is you don't have the money. You can't feed. They go to your house and your refrigerator doesn't have food. Okay, you're neglecting your kid from feeding them. Your kid looks malnourished. Or, you know, they come up with all these things. But really, the issues, a lot of the times, I'm not going to say all the times, but a lot of the times, the issues aren't about abuse. It's about a parent needing support, a parent needing more resources, a parent needing, like, some support to understand, like, how do I communicate with my kid, right? Like, and we know that when children are removed from their families in these, like, very extreme ways, that it actually creates more trauma and more violence. And so, you know, that's why we had a whole campaign, Keep Black Families Together, because not saying that all families are not abusive, but we know that Black families in every system, whether it's the mass incarceration or the family policing system, shout out to Dorothy Roberts, that in all of those systems, Black families have the highest rates. And whenever we're high in something, it's always something negative.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I do know, you know, I'm glad that you're here and on board, because you have been on the other side. You know, you've been in the belly of the beast, and you can see what's going on. And I know that we can't do programming to decrease the number of families, right? We can support families by offering this program. But we also are doing the work in the policy sector to try to think about ways to eliminate some of the systems that lead to higher removals of Black children.
Yes.
Because it takes all the approaches. Does anyone want to share a success story or an example of, like, the SAFE program and how it's had a positive impact on one of our families, without saying their names and telling their business? Or how it's maybe even had an impact on you and your parenting or your family? Because, listen, we do these workshops and then we go home and I'd be like, oh, I got to actually practice what I was preaching. Anybody had a practice what they preach moment?
Absolutely. So one of the curriculum goes over our caregiver, you know, allowing our youth to have a little bit more independency. But in doing that, you have to ask, like, these main questions, like, who's going to be there? Where exactly are you going? What time are you coming back? And just, like, going through all the drills and making sure you're intentional and making sure that you let your youth know, like, I care about you, but I'm going to stand firm on, you know, if you can go or not based on your responses. So I do have a 13-year-old, and she often says, oh, Mom, can I go to the mall? Like, okay, which mall? Just the mall. No, not just a mall. Like, I need to know full detail, like, which mall, again, who's going to be there. And I was, like, going through all the steps, and I'm like, oh, yes, this is working. So she was looking at me, and I was looking at her, and I was like, what you gonna say? And she didn't give me all the responses I needed. So, you know, I took that into my own my own parenting strategy and said, okay, well, I guess you're not going unless you can offer me all the answers that I need. And, of course, she was upset, but she was just like, okay, I'm gonna get all the information that you need, and then I'll come back. I'm like, well, I'll be waiting when you come back. So, yeah, it helps.
Did the baby get to the mall?
No, she did not go to the mall. Did not go to the mall because you couldn't explain to me who all was going to be there. You was missing vital information. So
you need all the details.
All the details.
Other folks have either personal experiences that the curriculum has impacted you or that you may have noticed some growth and transformation from one of the families in the program.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have two stories of, like, working with the youth, because it's, like, 7 sessions, right? So none of these students, or, like, most of them didn't know each other. Some of them were, like, siblings, and some of them were just, like, kind of really shy and, like, timid and, like, not talking. But we did, like, create, like, ground rules and, like, things that we can feel comfortable in the space. And I feel like after, like, week 3, like, this one student was just, like, you know, sharing and like talking more and like really like talking to like other students, like when we have pairs, and they were just like kind of really open and like really vulnerable and like really sharing their experience. And I feel like they were the youngest in the group, and so it like kind of inspired other folks to share, and so it was like really, it was a really good yeah, just like learning experience with them in the first cohort. And then I think another one was kind of during collaboration time, like the whole family session, and kind of setting agreements of how we can be intentional and like show for ourselves and our families in this space. And I seen kind of like language change from, like, you know, I don't wanna say negative, but like negative like comments, but like to positive, and like seeing kind of like the other side of it, or just like being optimistic and seeing how we can like affirm and like build up our youth, even if they're not at the point that we want them at, but like also honoring their autonomy and like seeing how they're showing up and like kind of maybe talking to them and like seeing like what's going on. So I thought that was like really powerful to like see the shift in language and like seeing how that can impact the youth as well.
Yeah. Shifting from that Tough love. Because I think it was like some little pet names that, you know, Black people love a good old pet name. Mm-hmm. I ain't even going to tell you what my little nickname is from growing up. And I'm like, why y'all still calling me this? I'm 40 years old. But we love to give a kid a nickname. And sometimes it don't be actually nice or positive, or, you know, it's a thing that's in your family that's a joke. But out in the public, it might make your kid feel the kind of way. And so it was stuff like that, like shifting, not necessarily shifting like terms of endearment, but there was like some joke that was going on. And so, yeah, shifting that tough love to, like, I don't know if they would say gentle love, but yeah, Black kids deserve a little gentle love every now and then, a little mushy mush.
Yeah, they do. This is on a podcast, so I'm sure my daughter's going to hear this.
Uh-oh.
But she has, she raises her voice a lot when talking to the kids, especially when they are to just get off course, or they will tell her she's hurting their feelings. And then, you know, I don't know what happens, but one day she was just yelling and yelling, and the kids were like looking like deer in headlights. And I'm like, well, I want to say her name, but I'm not. I'm not going to say her name, but, you know, I'm like, you know, maybe tone it down, you know, so they can really hear you. Because right now, you know, their feelings are hurt. I mean, even though they're acting up and, you know, they're not doing what you want, their feelings are hurt, but she couldn't hear it. So I talked to her and I hope I got her into the next class. Hopefully.
I didn't see her information yet, but I will definitely follow up with her. I did see
link. You responded.
Yeah,
so.
Yes.
She'll be there next week.
And she's a good mom, you know, and she loves her children, but she has a tendency to just holler. raise her voice a lot. Listen, so yeah.
That was my biggest challenge, just to let go of yelling.
Yeah.
And my kid came up with like rules. We had come up with agreements. Like when I was like, he's like, why do you always yell? I'm like, 'cause I'm frustrated. And he's like, okay, so next time just say I'm getting frustrated. So like I could know that I'm building up. And he's like, what do you need to do? Like, he was trying to ask me, what do you need to do in order to say? I said, okay. So we made promises too. I said, okay, I'm a breathe and I'm a count. And if you hear me counting, that means you know I'm getting frustrated. Right. So I think we need to stop communicating to like come back down. But that was when he was younger, because he's like, he was, his feelings would get hurt. Like, yeah, he couldn't hear me. You're right. Like, I can see the deer in headlights, and I'm thinking the louder I say it,
it's going through,
the more he gonna hear it. And it was the louder I said it, the more he couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
I don't know where she got that from, because I didn't yell. I wasn't a yeller, but I would bite my tongue. And so when I would bite my tongue, the kids were like, oh, we're getting ready to piss her off. Don't, you know, stop. But still, it was still, even that was a show of, like, anger toward them. So.
Yeah. Were you going to ask something, Miranda?
Yeah, I think another example that I saw during the sessions was the growth of a caregiver. She was the grandmother. She spoke highly of her grandson, saying, like, he did all these amazing things, but often, like, the communication wasn't there. And she noticed tremendous growth over the weeks of him just being open and sharing. And I think we all even witnessed it, like, some of the last few weeks he was singing songs and engaging with us. Yeah. And he even wants to come back and be a part of the program as like a part of our youth panel. And so I love seeing that, and the communication that the youth built with one another, like exchanging phone numbers. They're building relationships. Even some of the moms on the last day were like, I'm so sad I'm leaving. And so we know from that, like, it really impacted them in a positive way. And the change is there. The growth is there. And we're excited to help more families.
Yeah. Yes, I was definitely thinking about that family. The way that baby was knowing all the oldies, I said, ooh.
Oldies but goodies.
I was like, ooh, his mama and his grandmama did him right.
Yeah.
He was singing along to the oldies. I said, ooh, I need to see my son. Don't know none of these. I'm slacking on my pimping. Okay. As we close, I'm curious if you all as facilitators want to share any strategies or tips with folks who are listening who may not be able to, like, who may not be able to come in person because they might not be local, or they're like, I can't sign up. But maybe we can share some strategies or tips that we would give to parents who are looking to raise empowered, liberated Black children and teens.
I would recommend that they read your book.
Oh,
book?
I can't be, as parenting, Black parenting,
Parenting for
Liberation.
Yeah, that's it.
Great read.
Aw, thanks, Vanilla. Yes. I did not pay her to do this.
No, she did not. but I'm accepting.
So I'll take my donation.
Right.
So I want my cut.
I would say just take some time out, like designate a time out to just sit down and just have an authentic time with your family, whether that's, you know, watching a movie or stopping and just have a conversation, like, really, like, how are you feeling? And for the parents to just be in the headspace of let my child talk, let them engage with me and just share how they're feeling, and then even stopping to say, like, hey, I love you and I'm proud of you. Oftentimes we get so caught up in the day-to-day and everything that goes on in our lives that we just don't take the time to just stop and just enjoy our lives a bit. So I would definitely say that would be a great starting point.
Yeah, I think adding on to, like, being present, I think just having, like, open communication, and I think, like, I'm always thinking about the one game, like, where you see, like, how your parent responded, how you think they're going to respond. So just, like, yeah, just, like, asking open-ended questions, maybe not just focusing on school, but, like, seeing how they're really doing. And I think, yeah, also just, like, seeing respectful ways you can be vulnerable with your youth, as well as seeing, like, how you can build trust and, like, let them be autonomous beings in themselves and in their personality. Always fave when they're wearing their outfits. But yeah, I think those are some tips that I have.
I would say relax too. Yeah. Relax.
Take a nap.
It's not gonna be catastrophic if they don't get it, mm-hmm. or if they're doing something, you know, that you may not like. There's time and there's room for change. So just relax.
Yeah. I was gonna say that's what my youngest sister teaches me. Because my mom, like, I'm the oldest, so, like, when she says something one time, I'm doing it. Like, mm-hmm. it's no talk back, it's no, I'm going to do it. My youngest sibling, she be teaching me to relax. I'm like, okay, we got to negotiate. I'm like, okay, so I tell you something, and then she's like, oh, I'm going to get to it. So then I'm like, okay, when are you going to get to it? So then she's like, oh, I'm going to get to it then. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to give you a little time. So I think that's something that I'm learning to, like, you know, give time and, like, also communicate and, like, ask, like, wait, mm-hmm. we need this to get done. So thank you for that reminder.
Yes, Fenella, I've learned that from you, too. I need to relax.
And that was so true.
Yes.
Now, my children, they're like, who is this lady?
They're like, she is not the children. Paradise, is their sister the one who taught you about, like, self-care and, like, because your email out of office email, everybody comments on it. It's the one from your university email address. It's like, I do not respond to the capitalist construct of time.
I love that. That sticks in my brain. Every time I email you, girl, I'm just like, oh, I'm going to give her time and space.
Girl, that she don't respond
to capitalist
time. That's what she's talking
about. Right. I think it's a mix of her and my mom. She doesn't outwardly say, like, oh, I'm doing this, like, for self-care, but I see it. And she's like, yeah, I'll get to it when I get to it. And, like, prioritizing. And I think, yeah, just, like, kind of having my own run-in with, like, burnout and, like, organizing and, like, caring for, like, Black students at my university and, like, seeing, like, oh, I'm going to graduate. How I'm going to be doing all these things if I'm, like, doing so much. And I think, yeah, just, like, reading and, like, seeing the impacts of, like, being productive and how that's, like, really detrimental to Black women and just like the stress levels and the life expectancy going down. So I was like, okay, let me take a little step back and like seeing what are some small ways that I can like give myself grace and also like prioritize my community. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
We all admire. Help me make my away message say that. Well, I do want to thank all of you for coming and having this conversation and also just pouring into the Black families in our community. You know, like, you don't have to do this. You signed up. You said yes. You do time. It's in the middle of the night. You know, you're showing up at 4 in the afternoon, and you don't get to get home until, like, 8 p.m. That's for the facilitators. Now, if you want to sign up, it's not that long. But for the facilitator side, you know, you commit a good amount of time. And so I do want to give you your flowers and say thank you so much for pouring into our families and giving back in this way. Because you don't have to, but because of your commitment to our collective liberation and to Black liberation and want to see more Black families thrive, I know that's why you do it. And I want your Black families to thrive as well, right? So it's like, as you give to the community, I hope you also feel us pouring back into you our appreciation and gratitude as an organization. So before we close, I forgot, that was my thank you. Are there any things that we should share about upcoming events or when's the next cohort? Because people will probably want to sign up now that they heard this.
Yeah, so cohort number 2 is starting April 23rd. So we're looking for you. You can email me at education@parentingforliberation.com. So I'm waiting.
Sign up. Other things that people are all got going on?
Got a couple of things going on. I'm trying to remember. So we have a film screening, To Be Invisible.
Ooh, that's about the CPS system.
So it's like, yeah, following the story of two families in North Carolina and trying to do that reunification process. So that will be at USC on April 16th. And then we're also getting ready to, you know, use our voice and empower our students to think about ways we can make some policy change. So we are going to be participating in the legislative day with Democracy Now! At the end of April, I think the 28th, 29th. So, yeah, really excited about that and thinking about ways families can stay together. I think there's a couple of bills about families not getting policed right after the baby is born and not getting drug tested or like that, going strictly to like CPS and things of that nature. So that's some things that I remember.
And the way these two ladies found out about P4L was through the Black Mama Magic event. And so that one is coming up again. We have it every year in May. I think it's on May 5th this year. So save the date. It's going to be fun. It's going to be nice. It's going to be about, we're partnering with an organization called Kimberdive that does Black like sexual health and wellness. So it's going to get a little sexy because mamas don't think about themselves in the sexy, you know, sexual health way after we have babies, you know. Right. And so, yeah, that's going to be fun and a little spicy. So save the date. Okay. I think that's it for now. You know how we always close our safe meetings? Who remembers it? We are strong African-American families. That's all we got. All right, y'all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Parenting for Liberation. I hope something on this episode will inspire you on your parenting journey. Please like us on all social media at Parenting for Liberation. Until next time, let's get free, y'all.